I hope the message is strongly being broadcast out there that we're having face-to-face summer school. We are not going to have remote. Virtual is still available. Transportation is available for face-to-face summer school.
Now, that was Chairman of the Escambia County School Board, Bill Slayton, the other day at the meeting they had last week to talk about the future of school, summer and fall. Joining us now, we have Superintendent Tim Smith. Tim, welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News, sir.
Good morning, Andrew. Good to be back.
Yeah, great to have you. By the way, after I think you've been here in town about 4 or 5 months, I hope it's going well. It's certainly wonderful to have you, and I hope you're enjoying the job so far.
Well, thank you, and very much so. What a fantastic community the Escambia County is, and really enjoyed meeting people, so many caring people and dedicated to this community and to our kids and schools.
Absolutely. Now, we all have heard the news, or maybe we haven't all. I mean, if you pay attention to the media, you have, and if you don't, well, you know, we're trying to work on that. But coming up this summer, we are no longer going to be doing any of the remote learning. The remote learning is completely off the table, right? So what options remain for students for summer and fall?
That is correct. We are going to transition and take that blending remote model off the table as far as options. And that system was really designed back in the summer last year so that there was some flexibility for students. We had no idea at the time how long the pandemic was going to last, and so that system was designed so students could be in a remote platform and then transition back to campus at some time during the year. So now we have gotten to a point where it's time to really identify the two lanes a little bit more clear. So one is, of course, going back to campus, having the face-to-face option, and the other is going to a full-time virtual program. We have the Escambia Virtual School. There also is the Florida Virtual School. So it would be an either-or decision that families would make. Our Escambia remote program is available, and typically where that transition point is you don't want to be moving in and out of that virtual program,
right?
Because you get immersed in courses. So, you know, semester breaks would be if people do make a move from that, you'd want it at semester at the end of the year, not in the middle.
What is the difference between Escambia Virtual School and Florida Virtual School? I always thought of those as being basically the same thing.
They are very similar. Florida Virtual School is a very large organization, and they offer an array of classes, and especially in some of those specialty classes at the secondary level, the high school level. Our virtual school is operated right here, and it gives students an option to have a local organization, and it does very, very well meeting the needs of our students. But really, it's just an organizational difference. Ours is operated by the school district, whereas the Florida Virtual is a very large statewide and actually beyond the state platform.
Oh, okay. And of course, people could always still homeschool. They could go to private school. There are some other options, but there's no more going to be that remote learning. So the question that leads to, both for summer and for fall, is what's the new protocol going to be when a child tests positive for COVID-19? Because one of the advantages of having remote learning is that you can move on to remote if need be, if the circumstances fit, even for a short period of time, so the kid can still be taught while they're on, you know, isolation or quarantine. What's going to be the future protocol for that?
Yeah, that's a good question, because one of the things that has been very helpful in our schools is the contact tracing and having students who have contracted COVID to make sure they're at home, and that minimized the spread certainly in many, many situations. So we will continue to work on developing that as we get into summer school. There are some different options. One is, of course, communication with the teacher, take homework, email, So almost, if you really think about it, some form of a virtual through email and some of our electronic platforms that we have in place, such as the Focus program. So there will be communication. Right now, though, we will not have that blended approach. So you are correct. That will be a little different. It'll be a little bit more case by case situation.
I guess one of the other sure. questions that I think a lot of people have is about masking, and you guys have made the announcement that masks will no longer be mandatory. They will be optional entirely at the student's discretion. Is that right?
Yes. So what we want to do is this summer, we want to have a very robust summer school program and really encourage students who may have struggled with remote learning or just fell behind and didn't learn all the standards to the degree that normally is done if we've had a struggling student this year. Many unique aspects to this year. So we want as many students as we can to participate in our summer school program. And there, just by nature of summer school programs, they're much smaller, you know, than a normal 100% full capacity school year situation. So it's going to give us an opportunity to really transition. And with those smaller numbers, we're going to make the masks optional. So if a student wants to wear a mask, they're certainly more than welcome to do that in the summer and certainly going into the school year. We want students to have that option. It's the mandatory aspect that we're going to gravitate away from and implement that in summer, and that gives us a transition period to work out any kinks and make sure we're ready to go in the fall.
One of the things I know the CDC has emphasized this repeatedly, the numbers bear this out, but that the 10 and under population, you know, the K through 6-ish sort of population is very different from the 7th grade or 6th grade and plus population. They're more like adults. Now, neither group is vulnerable, particularly to serious consequences, but the 10 and up do get the disease. They are transmitters. Is there any difference in the way they're being treated by the new protocols by that age split, or are they all being treated the same way?
Yeah, our protocols will be consistent K through 12.
Okay.
You make a great point, because just by nature of our secondary schools too, there's more interaction, students changing classes,
right,
activities, you know, and so forth. So that is something we have to continue to keep our eye on.
Okay, and it's because that kind of raises the question of the masking to me. If, you know, would there not be a merit maybe in having the masking at the upper age category? Possibly. Anyway, that's just kind of where my head is at on this thing. Switching just a little bit, obviously, we recently did, assessment testing. There's been the announcement that those wouldn't count against students for either promotion or graduation. I sympathize with that, because the underlying assumption is that the testing is going to show bad results. The kids are way behind. We know remote was not as good as in-person learning, though everybody's trying to do their best. What my worry is that, are we promoting and graduating people when they just really haven't gotten the progress educationally that we would expect them to get to be prepared for the next level or to be graduated?
Well, and one of the most important things with that topic is we as a school system have to have a valid credit that is earned. And that's always an important protocol for us to have in place with every course at the secondary level. So what we're talking about is there are a couple courses that have state testing associated with it.
Uh-huh.
And students haven't had as many options. They won't have as many options, especially our seniors. They missed testing last year. And you can make up those tests. You can retake those tests as many times as possible to pass, to show, you know, proficiency in that course. But we still have the grades that students earn as well. And that's an important metric and an important measure that we do utilize. There are also some other measures that can be put in place with diagnostic testing and so forth that we can get a good snapshot to make sure that we're on target. So it's been a quirky thing with testing the past with missing testing last year. And so having that flexibility is really important, and it really now falls on the shoulders of our schools to make sure that students are passing the course, that they are passing the standards and having a valid credit for each course that they're taking.
All right. And that makes sense, certainly, as well. So I appreciate that answer. And what we want to make sure people do is they register their kids, register your kids, make sure and let the school district know, especially if it's kindergarten and it's a first kid in the family, make sure that you go to the website and sign in and log in and create the account and do all the stuff that you need to do, because that's going to be essential for them planning and for them expecting to see your kid when he shows up for the first day or she shows up for the first day. Dr. Tim Smith, Superintendent for Escambia County Schools, thank you for the time this morning. And thanks for doing what you do to make our kids learn. We certainly appreciate the work.
Thank you, Andrew, and appreciate you giving me some time to share with you and the community.
Absolutely.
It's a fantastic community, and honored to be here.